I want you to just close your eyes for a second. We are going to time travel a bit.
Okay. Where are we going?
It is 2005. You're sitting in your friend's basement. It's maybe 2 a.m. on a Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I know this scene.
Right. And there is this distinct smell in the air. Let's call it a mix of stale pepperoni pizza and just absolute teenage desperation.
A classic aroma.
Exactly. You're staring at this heavy, chunky CRT television.
Yeah.
And you are gripping a PlayStation 2 controller so tightly that your hands are actually cramping.
Because the stakes were incredibly high.
Oh, astronomical.
Yeah.
You weren't just playing a video game. You were in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
But here is the thing, and this is really what we're digging into today. We aren't talking about a shooter.
Right.
We aren't talking about Call of Duty or Halo or anything like that.
We are talking about football.
Yeah.
Or soccer, depending on where you're listening from.
Exactly. But not the one literally everyone plays today.
Yeah.
We are talking about Pro Evolution Soccer. Or, if you were cool, just PES.
The absolute king. It really was just a legendary era for sports gaming.
It was. And looking at our stack of sources for today's deep dive, we've got articles, retrospectives, even some old forum archives from 2026. It seems like that name, PES, it triggers this intense and almost painful nostalgia for a certain generation.
It really does.
But for the younger crowd, or maybe people who just casually play EAFC now, this might sound like ancient history. Because there was a time when this game wasn't just like a competitor to FIFA. It was objectively, undeniably better.
It was the standard, period. And what we are looking at today is this fascinating retrospective we found. It's titled The Soul of the Pitch, The Rise and Fall of PES by the Tekken Game Plus team.
Yeah, it's quite the read.
It traces a really dramatic arc. We are talking about a franchise that completely defined what a sports simulation could be. And then, well, it basically just drove itself off a cliff.
Right. Ending up as this free-to-play mobile game with a Metacritic score that I still kind of can't believe is real.
Oh, the score is real.
0.6 out of 10. I mean, that is statistically hard to achieve. You almost have to try to be that bad.
It is a tragedy in the classical sense. But the mission for this deep dive isn't just to be sad about old video games.
Right, right.
We want to understand the actual mechanism of that collapse. How does a product that had what fans called the soul of football lose absolutely everything? Was it the marketing money, the licenses, or was it actually a technical failure in the code itself?
That is the part that really got me, because I always assumed FIFA just sort of bought their way to the top. But the sources suggest it's way more complicated than that.
Much more.
So let's start at the beginning, because to understand the fall, we really have to understand the climb.
Yeah.
And our sources take us way back to the mid-90s.
The PlayStation 1 era. This is really where Konami, the developer behind all this, established their core philosophy. They released a game called Goal Storm in 1995.
Goal Storm. I mean, that sounds like a weather disaster, not a sport.
It is a very 90s name. And the game was a bit clunky. But the key thing here, and the source really emphasizes this, is that Konami was chasing a very specific sensation. They called it the good feeling.
The good feeling.
Yeah. While other developers were obsessed with flashy graphics or getting licensed music, Konami wanted the physics of the ball to feel heavy. They wanted the simple act of passing to feel genuinely satisfying.
So they were prioritizing the invisible stuff,
yeah,
like the math under the hood.
Exactly. And that philosophy evolved into International Superstar Soccer, or ISS. That was the main precursor. And then in 2001, we get the real revolution.
The big rebrand.
Yes, the rebranding to Pro Evolution Soccer on the PlayStation 2.
Okay, so the PS2 era, this is where the sources get really, really glowing. They describe this as the golden age. But aside from the gameplay, there was this specific mode everyone talks about, the Master League.
Oh, yes.
I totally missed out on this back in the day. What was the deal? Was it just a standard season mode?
It was a season mode, but it had a very specific hook that modern games have largely just abandoned. Right. In most sports games today, you pick Real Madrid or Manchester City, and you just start with a team of absolute superstars.
Right, you get the best guys immediately.
But in Master League, the game forced you to start with a team of absolute nobodies.
Wait, like randomly generated players?
No, and that is the beauty of it. They were specific, consistent, terrible players. It was a fictional squad that every single player started with.
So everyone worldwide had the exact same bad team?
Yes. And the fans formed this bizarre emotional attachment to them. There was this one striker named Castolo.
Castolo.
An absolute cult hero. He was fast, so you could run past defenders, but his shooting stat was abysmal. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Amazing.
And then you had Mananda, the playmaker, who was seemingly 45 years old and couldn't run to save his life, but he could pass beautifully.
It sounds like a Sunday rec league team.
It basically was.
Yeah.
But the source points out that this created a genuine narrative journey. You weren't just managing a spreadsheet of stats. You were taking this ragtag group of misfits and just trying to scrape out a 1-0 win against Juventus.
That's hilarious.
It was an RPG, basically. You leveled up. And when you finally saved up enough virtual currency to buy a real player, like a Thierry Henry or a Ronaldinho, it felt like a monumental achievement. You earned it in blood, sweat, and tears.
That actually sounds incredibly addictive. It gives you a real reason to care about every single match.
It absolutely was. People played Master League for months, sometimes literally years. But the mode only worked because the gameplay on the pitch was so distinct from FIFA.
Yeah, the sources keep using this word, simulation. They say PS was a simulation and FIFA was an arcade game. But for someone who doesn't obsess over video game mechanics, what is the actual difference there?
It's a really great question. Think of it like a movie fight scene versus a real street fight.
Okay, and listen.
FIFA was like a Marvel movie fight scene. It is perfectly choreographed. It looks spectacular. You press a button, and the character performs this smooth, predetermined animation. The ball is basically magnetically attached to the foot until the animation says it should leave.
So it's scripted in a sense?
Right. It looks amazing, but it's rigid. Now, PE specifically, from PE3 to PS6, that was the street fight. It was heavily physics-based. The ball was a completely separate physical object from the player.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it could bounce off a shin, hit a knee, take a weird deflection off a divot in the grass. It was messy.
Which means it was entirely unpredictable.
Exactly. In PS, you could score a goal that looked ugly or weird or completely miraculous, and you knew that you did it. The game didn't just play an animation for you. That is what the fans meant by the soul.
The soul of the game.
Yes. In fact, the source calls PES6, which came out in 2006, the sacred religion of this style.
A sacred religion? I mean, that is some seriously high praise.
It is not an exaggeration for that community. PA6 represents the perfect balance. You had the unpredictability of the physics, but the controls were tight enough that you felt in total command. It was the absolute peak.
And sadly, as with all peaks, the only way forward is down.
That's right.
And this is where the story gets pretty dark. We move into the next-gen era, the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. You would think, with more powerful computers, a physics-based game would just get even better.
You would certainly think that. But this brings us to Chapter 2 of our deep dive, The Stumble.
What actually happened?
Well, Konami tried to rewrite the game engine. They knew the new consoles were incredibly powerful, so they tried to build a brand new system from scratch. And simply put, they completely botched it. PS 2008 is identified by our source as the first big mistake.
In what way, though? Was it just buggy?
It was totally unfinished. Players stuttered constantly. The frame rate, which is how smooth the game looks in motion, it just dropped all the time. The ball physics got floaty.
Oh, no. So they lost the good feeling.
Exactly. They lost that heavy, tactile feeling that made them famous. And while Konami was tripping over their own feet, a sleeping giant woke up.
EA Sports. The Death Star.
Precisely. We have to talk about the elephant in the room here, which is FIFA. For years, FIFA was widely considered the inferior game. It had the official licenses, sure, but the gameplay was super shallow.
Right.
But around 2008 and 2009, EA did something incredibly smart. They stopped ignoring P. They actually copied parts of PS's control scheme and invested heavily in their own physics engine.
So they closed the quality gap.
They closed the gap significantly, but then they introduced the weapon that would ultimately win the war, a little mode called Ultimate Team.
Yes, the card collecting thing. I have heard a lot about this. This is where people spend real money, right?
Billions. With a B. To truly understand why peace died, you have to understand the economics of FIFA Ultimate Team, or FUT. Before this, video games were largely a one-time purchase. You paid $60, you played the game forever.
Simple.
But FUT introduced the concept of games as a service to the sports genre.
How did it work exactly for the player?
It basically monetized FOMO, fear of missing out. You buy packs of digital cards to get players for your team. It is essentially a gambling mechanic, a gacha system. You open a pack, hoping for Lionel Messi, but you get a random backup goalkeeper from the Swiss League.
So you just buy another pack.
And another. And another.
And because the mode is online, you need the good players to actually compete against other people.
Exactly. It created a recurring revenue stream that was just astronomical. EA was making more money from selling digital trading cards than from selling the actual game disc itself.
Wow. And Konami just didn't have an answer for this.
They tried, eventually, but they couldn't compete with the sheer scale. That endless money allowed EA to buy absolutely everything. And that brings us to the license war.
This is the part I remember the most. If you bought FIFA, you played as Manchester United. If you bought PES, you played as, what was it, Man Red?
Man Red. Chelsea was London FC. Arsenal was North London.
I remember laughing about this as a kid, but the source says this was actually a massive deal breaker.
It was a fatal wound. Think about the casual fan, the kid walking into a store or browsing the digital shop. They want to play as their hero. They want the authentic jersey, the real stadium, the correct badge on the shirt.
Sure, that makes sense.
If they see Man Red and a generic plain jersey, the game instantly looks fake or budget to them.
Even if the actual gameplay on the pitch is better.
The casual market doesn't play enough hours to notice the subtle nuances of ball physics. They notice that the shirt is wrong. So, EA locked up exclusive rights to the Premier League, the Champions League, everything. Konami was fighting a war with zero ammunition.
So you have the licenses gone, the money gone, and the gameplay struggling on the new consoles. But Konami didn't give up just yet. We move into the 2010s, and there was this really weird period where they tried to use something called the Fox Engine.
This is a really fascinating technical detour. The Fox Engine was built by Hideo Kojima, the genius developer behind Metal Gear Solid. It was a world-class engine designed specifically for stealth action games, sneaking around, dynamic lighting effects, hyper-realistic faces.
Wait, they used a stealth game engine for a fast-paced soccer game.
They did, and visually, it was stunning. The faces in PS during this specific era looked incredible. Honestly, better than FIFA. You could see pores, sweat, real emotion.
Okay, so what went wrong then?
The source explains it perfectly. The fatal flaw was the infrastructure. See, a stealth game is naturally slow. It is single player. You don't need to synchronize complex data between two people across the world in milliseconds.
Ah, I see where this is going. Online play.
Exactly. When they tried to use this heavy graphical engine for rapid online matches, the netcode, the actual code that handles the internet connection, it just couldn't keep up. It introduced massive input lag.
Which is absolute death for a sports game.
Complete death. You press pass on your controller and the player passes half a second later. In a highly competitive game, that makes it entirely unplayable. So while FIFA offered the smooth, snappy online experience, PES felt incredibly heavy and unresponsive online.
So they basically alienated the online crowd, which is exactly where the entire gaming market was moving.
Correct. And despite all that, there was a brief last stand. The source notes that PES 2018 and 2019 were actually fantastic games offline. The gameplay was finally back. The soul was flickering again.
But I'm guessing it was too little too late.
By then, the market share was entirely gone. Nobody was listening anymore.
And that leads us right to the cliff edge. The decision that the source bluntly calls the suicide of a franchise. Konami looks at the numbers, sees they simply can't beat EA at the $60 console game, and they do a massive pivot.
The rebrand, 2021, they formally announced that Pro Evolution Soccer is dead. The new game is going to be called eFootball.
And the business model changes completely along with it.
Free to play. And cross-platform.
Meaning you can play it on a brand new PS5, but also on an iPhone.
Yes. And that single decision dictated everything else. If you have to make a game run on a 5-year-old Android phone, you simply cannot have complex physics calculations running in the background. You have to dumb the whole thing down.
So they stripped the engine.
They completely gutted it. They removed the beloved Master League entirely. They removed the deep tactical options. They simplified the controls so they would actually work on a glass touchscreen.
And then came launch day. September 2021, eFootball 2022.
It was a horror show.
I remember the memes so vividly. The screenshots were everywhere online.
The faces were totally broken. Because they tried to port high-end console assets to mobile and then back again, the facial animations just collapsed. Players' eyes were literally bulging out of their sockets.
It's certified.
Necks were stretching out like giraffes. The crowd in the stands looked like 2D cardboard cutouts from a 1990s arcade game.
And the physics, did they survive at all?
Completely broken. Players would glide across the pitch without moving their legs like they were ice skating. Arms would bend backward. Sometimes the ball would just turn invisible.
And that is exactly how you earn a 0.6 on Metacritic.
The community didn't just dislike it. They felt genuinely betrayed. They felt that Konami had taken this sophisticated adult simulation and turned it into a cheap mobile cash grab just to sell virtual coins.
It sounds like the definitive end of the story. The king is dead, long live the well, no one, really, just a broken mobile app.
But, and this is why I really love this deep dive, the story doesn't actually end there.
No, it doesn't. And this is the part that genuinely surprised me the most. We are looking at this in 2026.
Yeah.
eFootball is actually still around, and it's fine. They fixed the major bugs. It works.
But the source talks about something else. Something called the undead community.
This is incredible. If you go online right now, in 2026, the most passionate, highly active football gaming community isn't playing the brand new game. They are still playing PS6 and PS6 and PS2021.
Wait, they're playing a PS2 game on modern computers.
Yes, but it is not just raw nostalgia. They are modding it. It is almost like a digital preservation project.
What do you mean modding it? Like just changing the menu colors?
Way more complex than that. They've cracked open the old source code. They are artificially updating the textures to 4K resolution. They are importing newly built modern stadiums. But most importantly, they are completely updating the player database. So if I download this community patch for a game from 2006, I can play with players from today.
Exactly. You can boot up PE6, but you have Lamine Yamal, Jude Bellingham, Mbappe, all in their correct teams with their highly accurate stats wearing the 2026 kits.
That is genuinely mind-blowing. It is like putting a modern Ferrari engine inside a 1960s chassis.
Or actually the opposite. It is putting modern paint on a classic engine because the classic engine simply drives better.
Wow. That is a really powerful statement.
It really is. These fans are actively arguing that the code from 2006, that specific magical intersection of physics and soul, is still fundamentally superior to the billion-dollar gaming engines of 2026. Mm. They would rather play a blocky, low-polygon game that feels right than a photorealistic game that feels heavily scripted.
It is the ship of Theseus, but for video games. You replace the players, the kits, the grass, the stadiums. Is it still PE6?
The source argues that yes, it absolutely is, because the soul, the actual ball physics, the messiness, the unpredictability is the one thing you simply cannot fake. And that is the piece that has survived all these years.
That is surprisingly touching. It is really about the preservation of an art form.
It is. We so often think of software as totally disposable. You update your phone, you throw the old version away without a second thought. But this community is saying, no, this specific version had real value. This version was art. And we are going to keep it alive ourselves.
So bringing this all together for our listeners, we have the five big reasons for the fall. The lack of licenses, the invisible marketing, the failure to monetize like FUT, the broken online tech, and the fatal strategy pivot to mobile. We have the rise, the hubris, the financial collapse, and now this underground resistance. What is the big takeaway for us here?
I think it is a profound lesson about the hidden trade-offs in modern entertainment. We live in a world that heavily prioritizes polish, official licensing, and totally frictionless consumption. We always want the official logo, the smooth 60 frames per second, the constant drip of new content.
We want the Marvel movie.
Right. But in exchange for all that polish, we often lose the friction. We lose the texture, the rough edges that actually make something feel real. Konami had the art, but they lost the business war. EA had the ruthless business acumen, and they conquered the world.
It really makes you wonder, if we are so quick to trade the soul of a game for convenience and shiny graphics, what happens when we apply that to the rest of our digital lives?
That is a great question.
Are we going to see a broader movement of people deliberately seeking out old, clunky software just because it requires actual human effort? Like, will there be a digital raw movement where people reject AI-perfected tools just to feel the friction of creating something themselves?
I think we are already starting to see the seeds of that. People want to feel connected to the process again. And the source actually ends with a challenge related to that, a literal call to action for the listener.
Yeah, I saw this part. They basically double dog dare you.
They do. They say, don't just sit there and listen to us talk about it. Go find a community patch. It is abandonware now. It is super easy to find online. Download PEA6.
Even if you are a Gen Alpha kid who has only ever known loot boxes and microtransactions.
Especially if you are that kid. Download it. Ignore the pointy elbows and the flat, pixelated crowd. Just play one match. Feel the actual weight of the pass. Try to break down a defense that is actually thinking and reacting to you. And see if you can feel that soul we have been talking about this whole time.
I think I might actually have to do that this weekend. I need to see if I can still score a goal with Castolo.
Good luck with that. You're definitely going to need it.
That is a wrap for this deep dive into the rise, the fall, and the fascinating afterlife of peace. From the absolute glory days of the Master League to the depths of that 0.6 rating and back to the undead community keeping the flame alive, Thanks for unpacking this whole saga with me.
My pleasure entirely. It was a great trip down memory lane.
And to you listening, whether you are Team FIFA, Team PE, or just someone who really appreciates a good underdog story, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you on the next deep dive.